Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
Welcome to Myobi Defend Your Childhood, the podcast where every week we put a little bit of your past on trial. Wait, you don't know who we are? Well, fine. First, we take a movie that you like. You know the ones. The ones the buses always had on field trips.
We got a real jam going down. Welcome to the Space Jam.
The afternoon animated show tie-in.
Or rewrite history.
Or the ones your parents didn't want you to see, but you watched at a sleepover. So that's the game. The movies are 10 years old and the defendant hasn't seen them in 5. Then we, well...
We're here to talk about The Sandlot. When I was a kid, I wasn't allowed to play with the other children, so this is how I learned human interaction.
Ask them what they think.
Obviously, I remembered earwigs, because as soon as my parents found out that I was deathly afraid of parasites, they were like, let's show her Wrath of Khan.
So, in the end, does your past hold up? Can you defend your childhood? Tune in every Thursday to find out.
Hello, and welcome again to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. I am your host, The Monster, back to give you another episode of not necessarily the sci-fi news or a semi-review that I would do with Mr. Gene, but this is a new segment called Rewatch. As I've done before with the Green Lantern, this is now my second episode. So what is this series all about? The idea about this rewatch series podcast is to look back at a movie, especially one that I hated at the first viewing. The goal is to do some research about the production and get behind the scenes information about the movie and then rewatch it with fresh new eyes. So, with my analysis of my brilliant and superior mind, I will answer this simple question. Can you rewatch this movie again? So one of the things that I'm going to do at the end of my review and this podcast is give you 2 audio clips to give my final decision. So the first one is going to be a nay, which is going to be from Time Bandits. And then a yay will be from Ace Ventura. So a quick clip of those two, either one, will let you know what my decision is at the very end. So please remember, everyone has a right to like what they like. And this is just only my opinion. The second movie chosen for this series is Disney's 2012 John Carter.
I hope you've finished your cupcakes. And I hope that teaser, I think that perfectly captures the feel of John Carter, and which we're still working on feverishly to get out for March 2012. I'm excited to introduce to you the stars of John Carter. First up is my hero, soon to be yours, Taylor Kitsch as John Carter.
Yeah, right.
All right. Next is always the beautiful and passionate Lynn Collins as Princess Deja Thoris. And the powerful and noble leader of the Tharks, Willem Dafoe, as Tars Tarkas.
All right, so that was from D23, which is the expo that Disney has every year. So let's go into some of the background. We have the director, Andrew Staton, who really has a big career from Pixar. He has done A Bug's Life, Finding Nemo, WALL-E, and then he did John Carter, and then Finding Nemo Finding Dory, sorry, right afterwards. We also have Taylor Kitsch, who played John Carter. He played Remy, who was slash Gambit from the X-Men Origins movie Wolverine. He was also Lieutenant Alex Hopper from Battleship. We also have Michael Giacchino composed a musical score, and this came out, again, after the Star Trek 2009, so you can actually hear some of the similar notes that he used in Star Trek as he used into John Carter. Speaking about the 2009, there was a direct-to-DVD Princess of Mars with Antonio Sabato Jr. and Tracy Lords. I'm not going to go into any explanation if you know who she is, but nonetheless, you can actually check it out through the library at Hoopla. So through our digital service, you can download a copy of that movie. Prior coming out to this movie, about a week before, we had the Dr. Seuss The Lorax and Project X. And then afterwards, about 1 to 2 weeks afterwards, respectively, we had 21 Jump Street and Hunger Games. So it had a decent enough window to kind of not get clobbered by the competition either way. So it grossed about $284 million worldwide, which resulted in a $200 million write-down for Disney against a total production and marketing cost of $350 million. With that, unfortunately, the sequel to John Carter basically went away and was canceled. And even though Kitsch was interested in doing another John Carter movie, he would not do the sequel without Staton as the director. Okay, it happened. It's not the end of the world, so to speak. But let's go into some of the behind the scenes. Now, this book, which was originally called Princess of Mars, came out in 1917, in which we would have the first of 11 novels for John Carter. So at one time, all the way back then, there was interest in doing an animated version of John Carter. So in 1931, the Looney Tunes director, Bob Clampett, had approached Edgar Rice Burroughs to actually come up and to want to adapt The Princess of Mars into a full-length animated film. So it would have involved a lot of rotoscoping, which are basically hand-drawn techniques to capture movements. That was kind of interesting. The test footage was produced in 1936, which got pretty much negative reactions and pretty much shut down the idea of having an animated movie. Had this been done correctly, or had it gone forward, it would have been the first animated movie, full-length movie, before Walt Disney's Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. So during the 1950s, the very famous Ray Harryhausen has expressed an interest in filming the novels. And in the 90s, Mary Kassar, who produced Total Recall, had brought the rights for Disney and was looking to have it done by numerous people, and it failed many times. When it went to Paramount, even Robert Rodriguez was interested in to direct this, and I think the last person that was attached to this was Jon Favreau in 2005, and had left the project and didn't give a reason for that. But again, it's gone through so many different hands that this was not an easy project to put onto the screen. One of the things that I've also noticed is that a lot of the influences that we see in Avatar or Star Wars or more of the big sci-fi blockbuster movies, those elements came from the novels. Even Dune can pay homage to John Carter of Mars. So trying to get that element of capturing the essence of that book into things that already have been done differently, it was no easy task. So Andrew Staton took up the mantle in 2008, who grew up reading John Carter. So one of the problems that he had is that he had less time to do pre-production than his usual animated projects. So even though he has a good film background, it's kind of different in the sense of what he was trying to accomplish, which was a mixture of CGI and live action. Now, one of the other things that I try to do is to see if there was any problems with casting. We have Willem Dafoe, we have Lynn Collins, and of course Taylor Kitsch. All great actors, and they had no problems what they had to work with. So, again, not much of an issue there. Next, I try to go to look for the screenplay for John Carter to see what was left off or what was done differently. Unfortunately, could not find a copy anywhere. So, unfortunately, there was not much to go there with. All right, what were the reviews? Well, went again to Rotten Tomatoes. Critics gave it a 51% and audiences gave it a 60%. So pretty close to matching likeness on both ends. So let's start off with a couple of reviews. This is starting with critics. One called it a mess. Another wrote, where John Carter continually gets it right is pacing, levity, and the breadth of story. Another review says, even if Edgar Rice Burroughs' 11-volume series is adapted by its three screenwriters into a nonsensical mess, then it should be at least a visual feast, right? Hardly. So that was from the critics. And for the audiences, one wrote saying this is a fun movie to watch, funny with good explanations of the science that they used, and not too sappy with the love story. It wasn't hard for me to suspend my disbelief watching this. John took a longer time to come around and to be not so dry, but once he did, he was a pretty cool character to watch. John Carter must have been pretty cool at the time when the books were released, but like with so many things, including Star Wars and Dune, have been ripped off or inspired by John Carter, so revisiting the John Carter tale in these modern movie times seemed dull and tired. Alright, so let me go ahead and play the trailer to John Carter.
Mr. Burroughs, I'm afraid I bring sad tidings.
Your uncle's passing came as a shock to all of us.
Is a cage that keeps me from dancing with the one I love.
Our world is dying. Fate has brought you here, John Carter.
My mind holds the key.
You may be the only one who can save us.
So let's start off with the production problems. And it really boils down to not so much problems with special effects, green screen, reshoots. It really has to do more with marketing. One of the things that happened before was that because of the title Mars, didn't help the fact that you had other movies like Mission to Mars, Red Planet, Ghost of Mars, and Mars Needs Moms, which is done a year before the release of John Carter. So when it came down to producing and market this movie, because again, it's referred to as John Carter of Mars, they decided, let's drop the Mars part, so it's just John Carter. You could argue that he did not become John Carter of Mars until the very end in the course of the story. But the trailer also really didn't give enough detail as to who this person is, how did he get there, or what's the idea behind this movie, other than the CGI eye candy fest that you're going to be subject to. I think this is probably what was hindering the big success of John Carter, is you have a setting in Mars and yet you can't advertise it that it's a movie that says that it is taking place on Mars. So it's a good case study to look at as far as trying to work with early buzz to help propel your property to get out into the masses and have this fever pitch fanboy reaction that you really want to have, like for a new Star Wars movie, that everyone watches the internet and looks at that trailer over and over again and posts it on Facebook or Twitter or whatever social media they use. That's what you want to have happen, but again, that didn't really happen with John Carter. That's about it. Again, casting was not an issue. I liked the chemistry between Taylor and Lynn. Again, I could not find the screenplay to see if there was anything different that they left out. So, what was the good thing that I liked about this? Aha! Subtitles! One of the things that I hated watching the first movie was there were a lot of different terms that just were hard to understand who or what they were referring to. So watching this movie again with subtitles, 100% better. That was a major improvement. Now, I'm not going to go to every single movie to watch subtitles, but it really kind of helps flesh out stuff that are just going right over your head. One of the other things too that I wasn't clear about were, aside from the people that are kind of orangey reddish people and the green people, the Tharks. So you had two types of Martians, the Tharks, who had four arms, and then you had the normal humanoid that looked like us, except they were reddish. So they were referred to as the Red Martians, which is what Deja Thoris is. And then you had the green Martians, the Tharks. And then in the mix, you had the pasty, bald-head people, the Therns, which, again, what the hell's a Thern? Thank you, subtitles. Now I can see what you were going with. And also, too, in the initial fighting with the Martians, the Red Martians are fighting, there are two color banners. There's a blue banner and there's a red banner. The red banner are the bad guys, and the blue ones are the good guys. So if you didn't have those two banners on the ship and they were fighting with each other, then they're looking exactly like. That was the negative thing that I didn't like, because you didn't have that. All the guys had the exact same Caesar haircut, and all the women looked like Snooki from Jersey Shore. They're all orange. But in fairness, I still found Lynn Collins very attractive in certain pictures or certain shots. But after a while, it's just the color is just way orange. And we have enough orange right now in our current political situation that I don't want to be reminded of more orangeness. So what's the bad thing about this? Well, as I mentioned before, a lot of the source material has been done by other movies. And I really want to enjoy watching the origin that came, you know, like the father before, or, you know, the Jedi before, my father before me. That's the kind of thing that I would want to see. But in doing so, you don't really have a sense of fun, because let's take this scenario with a stranger in a strange land. Someone that you can relate to is that person, a man out of time or out of place, a fish out of water, whatever you want to call it. That character will be your linchpin to that universe. Not once did I feel with John Carter that he felt different. He never really gave much in the way of comment about the world that's around him. So, unlike John Crichton, let's say, from Farscape, or Buck Rogers in the 21st century, we never get that sense of, I get that reference, or I understand where he's coming from because I can see the world through his eyes. He just seems to go along with whatever was going, and it just didn't feel, I didn't feel like there was anyone I can care about. So other than Deja Thoris, again, very attractive on the screen, and she had some presence, and again, Taylor as John Carter has presence, but the character itself was just very one-dimensional. So in the very beginning, we were having that scene where John Carter is being captured and by the military that he's being arraigned on and thrown in jail. You know, he's got a mean streak to kind of rebel, so to speak. But even with that, it kind of gets, it doesn't go anywhere after that when he gets onto Barsoom, which is Mars. So the only type of moment that is a little too much, but I enjoyed that scene very much, is that we see John Carter fighting, and he's slaying all these other Tharks left and right, and in a fury of storm, and they're all dying all around him. And then we see cuts of when he was too late to help his family. So you kind of get that sense of what he was fighting for, was he didn't want to have this happen again to this new kind of family, so to speak. So the music kind of works in that sense, and the visuals are great. So, you know, a lot of those elements that he is super strong and he can do this literally almost by himself. Well, if you did it for that one moment, why couldn't you just keep continuing that and be the hero of the story? So it just seems as if he just kind of pulled back this greatness that he's able to do because he's on a lighter planet because of the gravity. Sure, there were some funny moments at the beginning where he was trying to acclimate to this new atmosphere, which he didn't even comment. And later on, we'll find out that he's on a different world, but it didn't seem to like almost faze him. So that was the kind of thing that it bothered me. And normally, I can let things go, but it seems that he didn't care, I didn't care, and the rest is just CGI candy that I'm like, I can do without. All right, so now it's time for my verdict.
Return what you have stolen from me. Return.
Unfortunately, this is not going to get a pass. I really tried to get through it. I think the first 20 minutes I was kind of in it. But again, what helped me at least get through it was because of the subtitles. But visually, it does more in a way of distracting rather than complementing what we had to work with the actors. Everything kind of looked the same to me, and again, I couldn't care less about anyone. In fairness to Taylor, Battleship, a movie that I hated at first, I grew to actually like Battleship now. It's stupid, brainless fun, but it's very well done, and it's very simplistic. It doesn't have to explain that who the hell are these aliens, other than they're here to kind of wreak havoc. So it was not as convoluted as the different warring factions that you had on Mars. So it didn't have to go through all that to be entertaining. But unfortunately, it is what it is, and we're not going to get a sequel. We're not going to get anything different in the future, at least not in the foreseeable future. So, all right, well, that does it for this podcast. Hopefully one day I'll come across another movie that I will rewatch, and, you know, we'll see. It will get better. But for right now, no. I'm sorry to say that. So this is two in a row that I've not been happy with the progression of rewatching something. Hopefully in the next rewatch episode, which is going to be coming out in June, it's going to be Hulk, the Ang Lee's version of Hulk. So that's the next rewatch. So we'll see what happens. There has to be a winner somewhere, right? All right, so I hope you enjoyed this podcast. You can always email me at monstersci-fi show@gmail.com. Follow me on the various social networks. Again, let me know what you think, your thoughts, your opinions, your concerns, anything. I am open to hear from you. So, thank you very much for listening to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. Sci-fi from a certain point of view. Good night.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.